doing it for a moment.
The economic consequences of independence are once again top of the agenda. Supporters of a no vote claim big business is worried.
Dire warnings from big business. Banks said they'd move south, retailers said prices would go up, and now another, possibly the most pessimistic of all.
They're talking about really an economic tsunami that could affect Scotland if we vote for independence on the basis of the financial risks from the banks.
This is one of the scare stories of the No campaign that has been shot down. You know, it's these kind of scare stories insulting people's intelligence, I think, that is one of the factors behind the growing support for Yes.
Well, business played a huge role in the lead-up to the Scottish referendum. As the debate became more intense, the likes of Asda, RBS, Standard Life and others warned of the dire consequences of a yes vote for business. But what about business and politics in Ireland? Do industry leaders have too much influence on our society and the decisions made by government? We're joined by Padraig White, former Managing Director of the IDA, and Professor Frank Barry, economist at Trinity College Dublin School of Business. You're both very welcome to the programme. Padraig, first to you. We mentioned Scotland there. Did business overstep the mark and its role and its duty, etc., in the Scottish referendum?
Yes, I think it did, but I see that very much as part of the British establishment. I would take a bet that the Treasury and the establishment really put the screws on the major companies to come out in a concerted activity against Scottish independence. So I wasn't impressed by them.
So rather than a case of business trying to influence government, it was business and government trying to influence people.
Yeah, I think absolutely. I mean, I think there's a particular British establishment, particularly in London. I mean, you get your knighthood, you know, to be by playing the game and so forth. And I think that was very obvious, that was a concerted approach between the heavyweights of the British establishment and the British political system to come out against the Scots. Interesting enough, the Better Together side at one stage quoted Tesco, you know, with a scare report that prices would go up in Tesco by 16% if they voted for independence. And to be fair to Tesco, they actually rebutted that earlier this month and said, they were completely neutral.
They were neutral on it,
and there was no basis for it. Yeah, so
there weren't too many in that camp.
No.
Frank, trying to Ireland, is business too influential in decision-making and policy in Ireland?
I think sometimes yes and sometimes no. So I think we can recognise that there's a tension between two kind of competing pressures. On the one hand, business has certain information that's valuable to government. Obviously, businesses are aware of what's going on in their sector and potential developments in the sector. And it's important that there be a mechanism whereby that information is conveyed to government so that the government can respond adequately. But on the other hand, businesses also are interested in trying to exercise monopoly power or gain stronger monopoly power, and they make special pleading to government. So it's important that there be a filter between businesses and politicians, so that a filter, for example, the role that was played by the IDA in its early days served as that sort of filter, so it was able to help politicians distinguish between valuable information and special pleading.
Padraig, is business too influential here, do you think?
I don't think so at all. I think the primary narrative in our media is very much anti-business. And in fact, I would heavily criticise business, with the possible exception of Michael O'Leary, of actually vacating the public stage to the other interests, particularly the trade union interests. Many times do we hear of threatened strikes or industrial issues, and the employer side are silent instead of coming out and defending the corner.
But do they vacate the public stage because they do all of that business in private?
I don't think so, because effectively now, I mean, the opinion and political opinion is probably more influenced by the public stage or Joe Duffy and Liveline than what very often what goes on allegedly behind closed doors. So I would strongly feel that the narrative needs to be changed, and the business sector should come out much more and defend their case. For example, let's take the Jobbridge programme, right? Now, which is the subject of debate currently, not because of the private sector, because of the public sector. I mean, the Jobbridge programme, anytime I hear it in the public arena, there's this suspicion, the young people being ripped off, etc. Whereas the reality is that 32,000 young people have got experience on it, and 60% of them are actually in employment, a bonus. 70% of them are employed by the private sector, who have been to the lead in leading this in the interests of helping young people. Yet the primary narrative that you hear in our media is that that it's a rip-off, that the young people are being exploited, when in fact the reality is the opposite. And I believe the business sector should be much more assertive in coming out and speaking for themselves instead of vacating the stage to the other interests.
Frank, business isn't getting heard enough in Ireland. It's not having its say.
Well, as I say, I mean, one can point to certain scandals that have almost sank the economy in recent years, whereby the relationship between business and politicians were too close. So one is the example of, you know, the planning corruption that we saw, whereby, you know, businesses, property developers and so on were bribing politicians, and that one of the recommendations of the Mahon Tribunal then was that there should be an independent planning regulator whose duty would be to look for cases where there was gross distinctions or gross gaps between the actions of politicians and the recommendations of the advisors with expertise in the area. So that's the sort of sentinel role that I was discussing, that I mentioned earlier on. And the other example that I'd point to is the fact that the banking regulator was asleep during the build-up to the crisis, so that banks and the financial services sector ended up doing things that were, you know, hugely detrimental to society, because we didn't have a sufficiently strong enough filter to be saying, these actions are detrimental. You know, the banking sector is growing too big or too monopolised.
What about that point, Padraig? And leaving aside necessarily the night of the guarantee debate, but the whole question of sectors like the financial sector having huge private access to civil servants, to ministers. We have a clearinghouse committee for financial services, which is made up of the most senior civil servants in the land and people who work directly in the financial services as well. That's where the business gets done.
Yeah, but first of all, I of course I don't condone corruption, and I don't condone the regulators being asleep at the wheel. I'm particularly interested in what you just said about the Financial Services Clearing Committee, because I believe the narrative on that is a perversion of actually what was and is a very good mechanism. I was involved in the establishment of that group when Charlie Haughey set up the Financial Services Centre, and it was radical. Instead of the civil servants who creating all the regulations and rules on sectors that they knew nothing about, he brought in the private sector, Dermot Desmond and others, IDA, myself, I was on the committee, and collectively we laid down the basis in a very transparent way for the financial centre, which has been a huge success and which today employs 25,000 people. When I read in the past year or so that, shock horror, the minutes of this committee have been revealed, and they show the financial sector are there in there making a case for the development of the sector. I mean, that's, I would regard that as perfectly legitimate, absolutely proper in a democratic society. And again,
But it gives them tremendous access. I mean, we have a situation where foreign direct multinationals here, they'll often say one of the great things about doing business in Ireland is you get great access to ministers. Enda Kenny is giving his telephone number around in California. I was passing government buildings at 7 a.m. the other day, and there was a man standing outside with a placard trying to make a case for restoration of medical cards for children with very serious illnesses. He wasn't inside the building having a cup of tea with the minister to try and get what he wanted. He was standing there alone at 7 a.m. There is a huge difference between the access that business gets, surely, compared to other interest groups.
Not necessarily. The Financial Services Clearing Committee is a transparent committee. It's designed to help the future of the financial services. And it makes absolute sense to have the views and the experts of people who know about the sector. I mean, the minutes of these committees are public, etc. So there's nothing secretive about it, and it should be totally open in a normal democratic society that you put forward your case. I mean, one of my concerns, for example, about the lobbying bill is that I'm chairman of maybe six SME companies employing over 10 people. If I, as the chairman of that company, speak to a minister in the future and say that some piece of legislation is going to threaten the basis of my business, I am technically a lobbyist and are going to have to register as a lobbyist and report three times a year.
Frank, what about that point? The new lobbying legislation, a new register and taking notes of contacts with ministers. Is it going to work?
Well, it's certainly not going to achieve a lot. It's really a distinction between transparency and scrutiny. So it does increase transparency. But what's really important is that, you know, the media and academics and others continue to scrutinise the extent to which lobbying is taking place and the extent to which it is achieving results that may be detrimental to society. I have a quote that I know you've heard from Garrett Fitzgerald. That's one of the things I say to my students, that this quote, one could spend one's whole life thinking about the implications of it. He says, democratic national governments tend to be subject to such strong pressure from vested interests within their own territories that many of their decisions operate against the interests of society as a whole. Now, we know what Winston Churchill said about democracies, and that's equally valuable, but it does mean that vigilance is required.
But I suppose he wasn't just talking about business, it was vested interests in general of every kind. We'll have to leave it there. Padraig White and Frank Barry, thanks very much for joining us on the programme.